The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Mark Amtower of Amtower and Company, which is entirely responsible for its content.
This is Amtower Off Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. Every week, author, speaker, consultant Mark Amtower gives you his take on what's going on in the world of government contracting. Amtower Off Center with your host, Mark Amtower.
Welcome to Amtower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I am Mark Amtower. My guest today, returning guest today, Bob Lohfeld of Lohfeld Consulting. Bob, welcome back.
Thanks, Mark. Always good to be here.
Take a couple of seconds here and tell people who you are, what you do, if there's somebody out there that doesn't know.
Oh, okay. Thank you. That's very gracious of you. I'm Bob Lohfeld, CEO and founder of a company called Lohfeld Consulting Group. And our mission in life is to help companies win government contracts. And we provide services in market strategy, capture management, and lots of proposal work, and then training in these disciplines.
And you work, depending on the company, all the way through the win process.
We do. In fact, I was just reminded here, we started working with a company 4 years ago and showed them how to fill out the forms to become a government contractor. And now they're a finalist in a single award, $16 billion program. So it's come a long way from first days of this is how you get registered.
That's not that bad.
Yeah. Another couple of months and we'll know if they're the winner.
All right. So so we are going to be talking about that and things like that throughout. But right now, we are the market. is in kind of a state of flux. How would you characterize this market?
Yeah, it's been in a steady downhill slide, and we've watched it, I think, for the last at least 5 years, maybe 8 years, peak and then come sliding back down as the Congress got more attuned to fiscal austerity and wanted to drive towards a balanced budget. So the government fiscal policy takes the brunt of that. We watched markets in, let's say, the DOD side peak back in 2011 and slide now to where they are in 2016. And they're down, depending on how you count it, somewhere between 15 and 25%. So huge dip on the DOD side.
And that tallies to over $100 billion.
It does. A total spend on the DOD side is looking like about $570 billion this year. As a rough estimate, and depending on world events, it may go up or down from that, but still a significant amount of money. And the civil side had a similar trajectory, although not as steep. They're down about 3% over that same five-year period. But the good news, if there's good news here, is that the market, the downfall has bottomed, and we're seeing the civil sector trending upward with some reasonable growth, and DOD inching its way upward, which is all good signs for us in the government contractor business.
Okay, so the prognosis for the next few years is?
I think next few years we'll see increasing spend on the civil side. And again, back to world events, sort of a flat to just modestly increasing DOD side. If we could put numbers to it, I think maybe the DOD side is going to see a compound annual growth rate of a percent or a percent and a half, and the civil side maybe two or three times that sector, that amount.
On the IT side, which is, I believe, where you not exclusively dally, because the last couple of times ago when we talked to you, you indicated to me you were going to be involved in the Army purchase of the new sidearm.
We were and still are engaged in that.
So your team's still a player.
Yeah, and we're IT focused, but we take on professional services and engineering services and some hardware.
So you are an engineer.
Systems. Yes, and once you are, you kind of always are. So I would gravitate towards numbers and flow diagrams and the things that engineers like.
There you go.
When we look at the IT market, it's steady. Around $100 billion a year, depending on how you count it, maybe $90 billion, somewhere in that range, depending on your definition of IT. And it's hard to get a grasp on it because a lot of IT is embedded in other programs and not easily accounted for. But we're seeing overall projection of a pretty steady market around $100 billion a year. with civil growing in that space and defense just creeping up modestly. But that's such a great turnaround from where we have been in every year seeing a contracting market and making it more and more difficult for firms to win business.
Okay. DOD side?
Yeah, huge on the DOD side, the contraction. But now stabilizing, I believe, and lots of thought leadership on the defense side saying we need to increase spending in the DOD area, and certainly we do, and hopefully the Congress will come along and concur with that strategy. It's kind of interesting, the consequence of the contracting budget is that companies in the market have had to up their game and become more competitive. You know, as the dollar shrink, the pie shrinks, and still there's lots of competitors in it. Everyone is trying hard to win, and I'd say the level of play has gone up, making it, from a historical point of view, more difficult to win business today than it has been any time in maybe the last 20 years.
Is that because more players or some marginal players are getting better? Or, I mean, I don't think I've seen an uptick really in the number of players.
I think number of players is decreasing, and we'll see it decrease significantly here in the coming years. Is this initiative, this OMB initiative called category management, comes into play. As the gist of it is,
you think it's going to last?
The jury's out on it for sure, but I think they did some smart things by enlisting GSA in the campaign and giving them a significant role to play. GSA can drive it forward and will.
Yeah, because I talked to Larry Allen about this recently, and we seem to think that category management is nailing its own coffin shut when it's migrating from products to services.
Well, there'll be huge pushback from the small business community because they're the ones that get displaced by this consolidation of contracts and consolidations of awardees. So if you're a winner on one of the vehicles that will be a major player in category management, then the good news is you probably have a 10-year runway ahead of you where you're in a premier position to do business with the government. And if you don't have one of those vehicles, either you go buy one or you go find another market to play in.
Yeah, it was interesting. Bloomberg had a blog post or an article out the other day indicating that with the rise of the use of Macs, that if you don't win one, you got to buy one or vacate the premises.
I think that's really true, and we're going to see that the companies begin to vacate it. You know, during the good days, you go back at the beginning of the Obama administration, we had programs in place called economic stimulus, and it was drawing in all kinds of companies that wanted to be in the government market. And then the austerity began, and those companies began exiting, and now we're seeing a consolidation with fewer opportunities to play, and more companies will leave.
I think one of the issues with the economic stimulus was you dangle the big carrot out there, but you don't tell people that the big carrot comes with its own set of rules, regulations, and how to play the game. And most companies that were coming in really weren't prepared.
I talked to lots of companies that thought all they had to do was fly into the airport and go around town handing out brochures, and the market would come to them. And this town looks more like a fortress keeping those kinds of companies out than welcoming them.
We were under siege for a little while, but the Huns ran away.
Yeah, and this is part of the changing market. As we get into a smaller market, a tighter market, a more controlled market, everybody in it is an A player. Everybody knows how to compete, and level of competition goes up, and as a result, it is harder and harder to win business, to be a success in this market.
Okay. Well, we're going to go ahead and take our first break. You're listening to Amtower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'll be back with Bob after these messages. Welcome back to Amtower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Mark Amtower. My guest today is Bob Lohfeld. You can find Bob at Lohfeld, L-O-H-F-E-L-D, consulting.com. I suggest you do so. Look for him on LinkedIn, too. He is there, and his team is pretty active there. What's a company got to do to win? If everybody's an A-team...
Yeah, with all the A-team players, I think you need three things, and they're really important. First, you you just have to have excellent performance on your current contracts. And if you don't, then that's the first place to focus. It's hard to sell into a market when your performance has been mediocre. So number one, get the performance up. Number two, you have to learn how to write high-scoring proposals in this competitive market. No longer will a mediocre proposal carry the day. And I think the market is moving away from this emphasis on the low-ball bidder wins the trophy and is swinging back more towards best value and price reasonableness. And number three, you have to be able to price in the competitively in the market that you're in. Not necessarily be the lowest priced offer, but be highly competitive in it. So those three things, Mark, I would stress.
Okay. So the high scoring proposal thing, I think, merits a fair amount of discussion here. I've talked about this to Carl Dixon, to a lesser degree, Larry Allen. Mm-hmm. And boy, for some companies, you know, the ones who are vacating the premises, apparently they couldn't figure out font margins, page count, et cetera. But beyond the facile, mm-hmm. how does one create a high-scoring proposal?
I think what's really interesting about high-scoring proposals is that as a proposal consultant, a team of consultants, we get to see a lot of proposals. We get called in to review proposals for companies and tell them what's wrong with it. And so many of these proposals, we find that the team is working hard trying to write a proposal, and basically we tell them, you're polishing a rock. This thing is never going to turn into a diamond, no matter how long you work on it or what you do. And it just has so many fundamental flaws in it that all the effort in the world isn't going to make it score any better. So we go back to basics, and we have a set of criteria that we use to describe what constitutes a great proposal or a high-scoring proposal. And there's seven quality measures in it that we strive to with all of our proposal activities. And if I can run through the seven.
Please.
First, it has to be compliant. And I think everybody in the proposal business knows that. If you don't follow the instructions, you won't make it to the finish line. Second, the proposal has to be responsive to the requirements of the RFP. And we find lots of instances where companies will write content into their proposals, but it's not responsive to the RFP. They don't understand the RFP. They don't understand the questions being asked. Third, and this is hugely important for us, the proposal has to be compelling. And we have a definition of compelling. It has to be rich in features that can be scored as strengths by an evaluation committee. If you don't have the strengths, then you don't have an offense in your proposal. You don't have a compelling offer. So we work very hard with companies to create those strengths in their solution and then show them in an obvious way in the proposal. Proposal also has to be customer focused. Our proposals are all about how we help the customer achieve their mission and accomplish their goals and needs, not all about how important we are as a contractor or our clients are as a contractor or their world-class pedigree. It's all about the customer. Proposal has to be easy to evaluate, and we've gotten debriefings where the government has come back and said, thank you for writing a proposal that was really easy to evaluate. It made their jobs much easier. So we focus on the evaluation strategy and how the government will review it. And then we know that as professional proposal writers, proposal has to carry its story in text and also in visual communications in the graphics. And there are certain messages that have to be there showcasing the features in the offer that can be scored as strengths. And we communicate them visually as well as texturally.
So tell me a little bit about that, because, you know, Mike Parkinson has this humongous book, the Billion Dollar Graphics book, talking about the use of graphics in proposal. I know it's not brand new, but it's relatively recent in the scheme of things, yes?
It's a great book, and we see companies using it a lot. What we tell them is that before you go to the book, you need to figure out what the message is that you want to communicate with your graphic, and then go pick a graphic that's appropriate to the message. So many companies go in and they pick the graphics and say, I like this one and this one and this one, and then try to put some words around it and stick it in the book. And it's great if the purpose of a graphic is to break up the text and give you some visual relief. But what we find with reviewers is a third of the reviewers are just going to look at the pictures and the tables and the data. particularly engineers will do this. They want to work their way through the diagrams. So what we have to embed is our message to win. The features of our offer have to come through this visual communication channel. So it's not just pick a nice looking graphic out of a book. It's get the message first.
Right. I wasn't talking about picking a graphic out of Mike's book. I was talking about the use of graphics generally in proposals. Is this relatively new? I assume that various charts, Gantt charts, et cetera, have been used in proposals for a while.
But. Yeah, actually, if you go back into the really old history, there was a period in time where proposals were largely all graphics and data. And we used to see proposals where every page was 11 by 14. They were foldouts with different panels. And you told essentially the whole story in graphics. So they look like a graphic novel. And then the market moved away from those and went heavy on the text. And I think now it's back beginning to understand the need for visual communication. And we always call it visual communication to stress the importance that it's the message that we're talking about conveying visually. It's not the graphic that we're putting in there to break up the text.
So the well-written thing also fascinates me because I'm reviewing, actually just finished a review of a new book now, on writing precise, and it's from a recently retired colonel who trained a lot of people on writing in the military, particularly commanding officers, because when a commanding officer is writing a report on a junior officer, that report can mean they're going to migrate up or just get lost in the shuffle and work their way out of the service. And regardless of their intent, most of them can't write.
What we find almost comically in some proposals is that we'll read a section of proposal called their quality control plan, and in the quality control plan we'll find four misspellings and 18 grammatical errors. And it speaks a lot about the quality control of the company when that happens. So our view is the proposal has to be well written, no grammatical errors, no misuse of words, get the slang out of it, and write it in a professionally competent way. There was, interestingly, a protest case here recently at GAO where a company wrote a proposal. The government rejected it because they said it was so poorly written they couldn't evaluate it. And GAO came back and said that's well within the government's right. If you can't write it clearly, then they don't have to evaluate it.
I was reading a LinkedIn company profile the other day that had no verbs.
Wow. Wow. That's a different style than we would use. I think we try to have a verb in every sentence.
So, yeah. Somewhere,
yeah,
they do help. All right, so what do you do in the early capture stage? You're starting to develop the proposal then?
Our initiative in early capture is to understand the requirement.
Okay.
And we have the customer repeat our clients over and over, best informed wins. The better they understand the requirement, the better they understand the mission, the more likely they are to create a solution that's better than anyone else's. So early capture is all about understanding the customer and then creating a solution that addresses not just their needs, but addresses them in a way where we can have features in our offer that can be scored as strengths. And the definition is fairly narrow as to what constitutes a strength. You have to exceed a contract requirement in a way that's meaningful to that customer, or you have to have features in your offer that increase the likelihood of successful contract performance or mission accomplishment. And those are things that light up the scoreboard, if you will, in high-scoring proposals. So we work with the solution team to discover those in their solution strategy and then showcase them in a proposal.
Cool. We're going to take a break. You're listening to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Bob and I will return after these messages. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm here with Bob Lohfeld of Lohfeld Consulting. You can find Bob at lohfeldconsulting.com. You can find him on LinkedIn. If you need help with your proposals, you would be hard-pressed to find another company better. I've worked with Bob, with Beth Wingate, with Ms. Paife.
Yeah, Lisa Paife. Yeah.
You know, a bunch of your folks on, can't say I didn't work with you. I've recommended you and my clients have been real happy with your work. So give them a call. So DOD has a issued a new memorandum on source selection procedures. What is it?
It's first, it's a great memorandum. It's I think about 80 pages all up, and it walks you through how DOD, from a policy point of view, will be doing its source selections. It replaces an earlier memorandum that addressed the same topic, but you know, here 5 years later, we have a new one, and it's even better than the first. The great thing about it is it brings standardization to DOD procurements, or at least it advocates policy that drives standardization in the procurements.
Okay, and it's color-coded.
When they do evaluations now, they've settled in on a color coding scheme, which is kind of neat. The colors are blue for outstanding and purple for good. Green is acceptable, yellow is marginal, and red is unacceptable. And then they go on to provide some definition for the evaluators as to what constitutes a proposal with each of these different color measures.
Verbs required?
It doesn't say verbs, but it would be a good idea to have some in your proposal. I would say a blue proposal is a proposal with an exceptional approach, an understanding of the requirement, and contains multiple strengths. So here we are back to this word about strengths. And we find so many companies don't understand this concept of strengths, and instead they just write to the RFP requirement, to the instructions, and ignore the evaluation criteria, and worse, ignore what goes on behind the curtain in the government's evaluation process. And this memorandum from Claire Grady shows a bright light on all of that goes on in the back room and is hugely insightful for companies that are writing and competing in this market. So I particularly like the five levels of scoring, and I like the emphasis on proposal strengths.
Okay. Well, yeah, because it kind of matches what you do.
Yeah, it does. And
did they borrow this from you?
No, it's a, I think it's a collection of lots of good insight across lots of procurements. The other thing in her memorandum is it spells out again the case for using low-price, technically acceptable evaluation criteria, and just makes it clear that that belongs on the commodity side of the business and discourages its use in service contracts. So they're spot on with the guidance. It just seems to take a little while for the guidance to trickle down, and seems to be an execution gap in places where they're not following the guidance. But hopefully LPTA will distance itself here in the past, and we can move on to a more rational decision-making process.
Okay. Let me ask a slightly different question here. Traditionally, Lofeld Consulting has offered courses in this. Are those ongoing courses, public classes? Where are you doing them, and how can people access those?
We teach the classes in this topic privately for companies, and the way the class works is we take one of the proposals that a company has written, and we use that as a case study and teach the people how to evaluate the proposal the same way the government does, go through the exercise, come up with our evaluation findings, and present it back to the proposal team. In every case, what the company thought was a great proposal turned out to be not so great, according to the evaluators. And
well, if they didn't win, there's one criteria.
I'd say we get those that have been decided and those that are still in play. So in some cases, we don't know the outcome. But what we do know is that the class has been transformative, and that every person that has attended and participated in it comes away with a very different view of what constitutes a great proposal. And that changes the way companies write. And we're seeing them change their methodology to follow this strategy that we've been advocating.
Okay. Before we leave this particular topic, I know we've touched on this a couple of times already, but what percentage of your business is people bringing you in, not last minute, but damn close to the last minute, to do a proposal review for them? And what do you find?
So we have a gate like companies do when they go to pursue a requirement. We have a threshold requirement for us, and that we cannot accept a deal where you have to have a miracle to get to the finish line. And some companies will call, and it's way too late to engage us as strategists. The smarter companies are engaging us early and asking us to do reviews. And I'll give you an example. One that's in play now is Alliant, small business and large business. The RFP is
huge.
It's a huge must-win vehicle for companies in the IT services market. The RFP is very complex. There's been lots of meetings on it, lots of strategy discussions. So we have a service offering where we work with companies to understand their strategy, coach them on their strategy and execution plan, and then come in and review the proposal at multiple steps of maturity along the way. Because we know historically the government is very quick to throw bids out if you fail the compliance or responsiveness tests. And Alliant will become a great example of that. A lot of companies will fail to make the cut because they had errors in their proposal. So that's an evaluation service. The other kind are the best value bids, where a company is, let's say, reasonably far along in the evolution of the proposal. They want a set of fresh eyes to come in and look at it. And in every case, we tell them we'll come in and spend a day or two reviewing their proposal, and 2 weeks later, or 3 weeks later, they discharge us from the project because it's not only what's wrong, but now can you fix it too? So a lot of that goes on in our market.
Yes, a lot of it goes on on a perpetual basis. We're coming up on the end of FY, not a tremendous amount of time left, but there's still time for companies to do a couple of things. So what's your best take on what they should be doing to win their alleged fair share?
Yeah, well, this is the rainy season here in the federal procurement cycle, and the government will typically spend or obligate a third of its money here in the final quarter of the year. The smart players have been planning for this all year long, and they started their planning last year based on what they did or didn't do in the fourth quarter. But to be a player in this rally at the year end, you have to have laid a pretty good foundation for it. And we would look at companies having a GSA schedule, mandatory to be a player here, having some vehicles in place where you can close a deal. And if you have socioeconomic preferences, be keen to use those. If we were running a company, and we would advocate a four-pronged sales attack here in the fourth quarter. And the first one is tell all your project managers, go visit your customer and say, hey, it's coming up on year end. Is there anything else we can do for you? And if you have some money that you haven't obligated, let's see if we can get it on an existing contract. So strive hard for contract modifications now. It's the season to do it, and there's time to do it. Business development managers, account managers, VPs, anyone customer facing, go visit the customers and find out what they need. And in your hip pocket, have a contract vehicle that you can use to close a deal. It does little good to discuss needs, requirements, and money and have no way to close a contract. So number two, go with the vehicles in hand. Third strategy is if you've got subcontractors that you've been using, get them in play and tell them to go out and rally with their customer set to advocate the use of your vehicles and see if you can draw business through that way. And then the smarter players will know that the workload within the company peaks in this, the final quarter, and they'll be looking at scheduling resources and planning for outside support on proposals and subject matter experts and all the people that you need to be able to respond to this peak in workload, and plan for that and be ready to go and get your share.
Do you see an uptick in GWAC use in the fourth quarter?
I do, and the GWACs, their play in the fourth quarter is absolutely huge. We know that these
we should also say agency MACs too, because
sure,
are
yeah, yeah,
not government wide.
If we look at the GWACs and MACs just in general, they'll obligate 40% to 50% of their total funding in the fourth quarter. So they're a vehicle of choice for sure. And if you run down,
run that percentage by me again.
Yeah, it's somewhere between 40% and half of the funds obligated under these multiple award contracts will be obligated in this quarter.
I need a bigger wheelbarrow.
Yeah, you do, and you know though, it adds up quickly because you look at Schedule 70 and MOBUS and Seaport E and NASA SOUP, and you got Alliant and OASIS and 8A STARS and all these vehicles of choice are out there just soaking up government dollars.
Yeah. And NITAC's on the rise there too.
Yeah, sure. I should have included them in the list. They're all out campaigning for the use of their vehicles in the market. And I saw an interesting briefing, Air Force briefing, where the briefer was talking about his procurement strategy, and he said his strategy was to use OPC. And I thought, what the heck is OPC? I hadn't heard that. And it's other people's contracts.
Yeah, and
he was not going to roll his own. He was going to go jump on someone else's and execute. So we think of these as task order contracts, and you'd think, you know, task orders are fairly small, but the reality of it is procurements that would normally go out full and open are now being pushed through these vehicles.
We saw that big one last year, almost $1 billion on Oasis.
Yeah, $940 million. One task order. So there's no definition to a task order. It can be as big as your imagination. And,
there you go. We're going to take a break. You're listening to AM Tower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I shall return with Bob for 10 more minutes after this. Welcome back to AM Tower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm here with Bob Lohfeld of Lohfeld Consulting. Once again, you can find him at Lohfeld, L-O-H-F-E-L-D, consulting.com. Bob also does an occasional column in WashTech, as do I. And I did one recently on social selling at the end of FY. So if you haven't seen that, take a peek. You and I run across each other in public, usually when one of us is speaking. Mm-hmm. But we both know that you got to go to events where you're not speaking, at least occasionally. So what's your criteria for going to events where you're not a presenter?
So I pick events based on who the speaker is, or speakers, and it'll be people that I want to hear what they have to say, respect them. They have significant roles in government that's important to me, and that they have some budget behind them, they can do things. So that's one criteria. The other is people that I think I should know. And I go because there's a speaker and I haven't met the person or haven't heard them speak, and I'll go just to hear what they have to say. So that's kind of my two criteria.
Okay. Do you, in the second instance, do you attempt to get on their radar while you're there? You have fairly significant name brand in the government market.
Yeah, it depends on what they said. I'm not one to walk up and stick a business card in their hand and feel like that accomplished the mission. It's more of an education for me. It's to understand their strategy and their views about actions going on in their mission area.
Okay. Before we came, I asked you to take a look at Market Connection's most recent study. Mm-hmm. And I use a lot of their stuff. I'll be using it heavily in my next book. Should be out hopefully before the end of summer. We'll see.
Good.
there's digital content that helps shape. It helps at every stage of the procurement process. And I'd really like your feedback on this. Anybody who wants this slide, it comes from the Market Connections Federal Content Marketing Review, and it's at marketconnectionsinc.com. You can download it for free. You have to give them your email address or something, but that's it. But it's really a magnificent slide. So there's seven stages: identification of the need for the product, allocation of budgets, determination of requirements, drafting the RFP, identification of potential contractors, suppliers, evaluation of bids, proposals, and making the final decision. So when you're working with your clients, how relevant is all this stuff?
Certainly relevant, because we spend so much time helping the government and helping our clients develop requirements and understand what's really needed to accomplish the government's mission. So what I particularly liked about the study that was done was that they took these different modes of introducing content in the market and mapped their effectiveness to the different phases of the buying cycle. So at the top of the list, if you said, We want to influence the way the government determines requirements or creates specifications or identifies features in an offer. A great way to do that is to produce a webinar and target it towards that particular mission area. And of all the different things that you could do, the webinar was the highest rated one for affecting requirements, highest rated modality for affecting requirements. And similarly, if you were trying to affect decisions, decision-making, case studies was the most effective tool. So you'd ask yourself, if you're in this market, are you doing webinars to promote your offering, your capability? Do you have case studies to support it? And the answer should be affirmative in both those cases.
What if your case study involves an agency that would prefer you not write about them? Can you do a blind case study?
I think you can, and you can say a large government agency. I've had just the reverse happen, that we did a case study and then got a phone call from the agency saying, don't you ever write another one where you don't mention us and give us credit for what was going on. So you gotta know your customer. It can go either way. But case studies are what people want to read about. They want to see the experience of others, and they're great tools in the market.
Okay. So the you know, one of the things that caught my attention in the most recent study was the growing use of automated capture management solutions. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, you guys came out with one late last year.
We did. We had a tool that we brought to market for companies that wanted to automate the capture and proposal processes and integrate the two together. As in most firms, these are disparate activities that often don't talk to each other. So we thought it made great sense to bring an offering to market, a software offering that pulled all this together. At the end of last year, we sold off that business practice in our company to a firm called R3 Business Solutions, and they are now outselling that software tool along with other tools that they have in the market to help automate the business acquisition process.
Okay. Now, but I want to clarify here. Automated capture management solutions doesn't mean it's going to generate a proposal. Yes, no?
That's a fact. Yeah. There are tools out there that will generate a proposal, but they're cut and paste tools. So you have to have basic content and you select it and it formats and puts it together. Ours is not that. Our whole process is all about a solution, proposals that require a complex solution, whether it be IT services or engineering services or professional services. They're all kind of begin with a clean sheet of paper and conceptualize what you're going to do.
Okay.
I was struck by the study. It said 42% of the companies out there in the market are using some form of automated capture solution. And it doesn't go out to define what exactly that is. So I'm going to take the largest possible view of it, and maybe it's a pipeline tracker or a CRM system.
Okay.
But not something that really integrates a capture process and collects artifacts along the way.
Well, we only got the overview, so we can ask for clarification.
I'd say it comes as no surprise that automation is finding its way into business development. And in the more mature companies, it's there significantly. And in the study, they said another third of the firms out there are looking at implementing some form of automation. So if you roll the clock forward 2 years down the road, two-thirds of the government contractors will have some form of automation in this capture management process.
You should have sold your tool to LinkedIn.
Yeah, that would be cool. That would be cool. I was looking at the study also. One of the things I liked was in the study, they split the demographics of companies into two categories, and I was sort of loosely defined. One is firms with win rates greater than 50%, and then all the rest of the firms having win rates less than 50 in a second category. And they looked at the characteristics of them. And I was really taken by the comment that 78% of these firms in the 50% or more win rate were hosting their own events. 73% of them were using social media. 70% were exhibiting at trade shows. And 62% were doing webinars, in contrast to the firms that weren't in the greater than 50% win rate. And for each of those firms in the lower win rate category has significantly less participation in these market channels. So correlation between effort
there,
and
there is, and you know, having spoken, both of us have spoken to a lot of those companies. They view that as a marketing cost, not a marketing investment.
Yeah, and it made it so clear in the study that the companies that are pushing this visibility in the market, thought leadership in the market, trust in the market, are the ones that are inherently more successful than firms that don't push it, are unknown broadly in the market. So huge payoff, you could say.
Well, you've probably heard me say this before. You can be a subject matter expert and live in your mother's basement with Dr. Pepper and Cheez-Its, mm-hmm. and nobody knows you, so yeah. What good does it do? So being what Lee Fredrickson would call a visible expert, known for a particular set of skills in a particular market niche, goes a heck of a long way.
Yeah. I take this message to heart in our own business, too, that in our consulting practice, we have webinars out there. They're available for free on lots of interesting topics, and a newsletter that people can sign up to where we give capture and proposal tips out every month, and we try to educate the market as best we can in our practice areas.
And your team's social media activity is well above average.
Yeah, good. Thank you. And we work hard at it. Thank you for coaching us in that area.
You're most welcome. Probably time for a refresher. give me some final thoughts here, Bob.
Yeah, it's a great market to be in, a wonderful market. The strongest, smartest players will be the ones that survive, and the ones that can adapt best to this ever-changing market will be the ones that prosper. So write good proposals, work hard at your capture efforts, and all of that will pay off for you.
And if you have GWACs, watch out for those RFPs and get them out quick.
Yeah, and don't chase everyone that sparkles. You know, pick your battles, because there's more out there than you can respond to, and pick the ones you're going to win. Work them
hard. There you go. Bob, thanks so much for coming in. Always appreciated. You've been listening to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. This is not my day job. I advise companies on all aspects of marketing to the government, including the content marketing side of things and thought leadership. Drop me a line at mark@federaldirect.net. And thank you very much for listening to AmTower Off Center.
You've been listening to AmTower Off Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. AmTower Off Center, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.